p.m. at Dante's Nightclub. That's located at 350 West Burnside Street. You can find out more about the show, including ticket information, at who's the Ross, all one word, no apostrophe, .com. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth. KBOO Community Radio is requesting proposals for a grant writer to provide ongoing grant writing services and application support. This is a one-year contract position for 200 hours, compensated at $25 an hour. Proposals must be submitted electronically to Delphine Crescenzo, station manager at Dell, that's D-E-L, at KBOO.FM. Proposals are due Friday, January 4th at 5 p.m. Responsibilities, background information, the scope of work, and proposal requirements can be found at KBOO.FM/grantwriter2018.
KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. Support KBOO, where music makes the movement.
The time is 6:01 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, Portland. This is Labor Radio. I am your host, Michael Cathcart. Thank you for joining us. It is a rainy, rainy evening here in Portland. One of the first we've had really of this year, it seems like. So everyone be, hopefully, if you're driving home or commuting home right now, hope you are safe in that weather. Joining me in the studio tonight is my good friend, Zach Markovich.
Hello.
Thank you for joining me. Along with being my good buddy, Zach and I are also musical partners. We play music together. And along with that, Zach is also engaged locally, you know, in not only the music scene, but also he works in the city. He is primarily a transport driver for products and goods.
Local coffee roaster.
There you go. Yeah, we won't disclose any more information than that. But needless to say, we will get to some issues regarding transportation in this city, and we will be discussing those a little bit later on, get some insight from Zach. But just to start out, there's a story I'd like to jump into, and it's kind of a long one, so we'll just jump right ahead. But, you know, we are right now, we're in roughly middle of December. Sports seasons are in full swing. You know, you have the NBA and the NFL and NHL season all happening. The Major League Baseball season just ended, and the Timbers, our local soccer team here, just narrowly came up short in the MLS championship, unfortunately. And it's not that often that we talk about sports on Labor Radio, but when labor organizing and sports do collide, it is an interesting mix, and so we have an interesting story for you tonight. In about a month, maybe a little bit over a month, the Super Bowl will be happening. That will be taking place in Atlanta, Georgia. And Atlanta, along with being one of the biggest metropolitan areas in the country, also has a very large public transportation system. That is run by the Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, otherwise known as MARTA.
MARTA.
Yeah, more colloquially, that's a hard word to say.
MARTA.
But yeah, so from here on out, we will be referring to it as MARTA. But MARTA operates not only buses, but also light rail and some heavy rail, you know, some commuter rails there. But we're going to be focusing specifically on the bus portion tonight, because one of, you know, when a city hosts a major event, and Atlanta, you know, recently actually hosted, well, recently, relatively, in the 90s hosted the Olympics there. But, you know, when any major city, metropolitan area hosts a major sporting and cultural event, such as the Super Bowl, a lot of things go into that. You know, you need, obviously, security and all those things, as well as the infrastructure for it, like hotels and restaurants and shops. But one of the unsung heroes of hosting a major event in a metropolitan area is the transportation system, the public transit that's offered. And so MARTA is actually going to be playing a huge role in moving around the hundreds of thousands of people that are going to be showing up, you know, because not only do people show up to actually watch the game, but it's a whole weekend event and there are side events happening. So even though, you know, you can only fit, I don't even really know what the new stadium there holds, but it's maybe at max 100,000 people.
Yeah, it's a significant.
Yeah, but so, you know, beyond that, there's also going to be all the support staff that are there and all of the fans that are coming just to be part of the experience. So people need to be moving around, and transit is an important element of that. And so it's actually just happened in the past few days, but the bus drivers, the folks who drive the buses for MARTA, have just announced that they've authorized their right to go on strike during the Super Bowl. Now, it doesn't mean that they are guaranteed to strike, but they are currently in the process of negotiating a new contract with the agency. So they are they're represented by the Amalgamated Transit Union, or ATU, Local 732. And so those workers, and supported by their union, have found themselves at odds with the agency, with MARTA management, over the contract negotiations. And so they've said, you know, we're at loggerheads here, we're not getting anywhere. So if necessary, we are prepared to strike, and that would be during the Super Bowl, which could effectively, you know, that would not only cripple the public who lives there, but also be a major hindrance to the success of that event.
Yeah, it would be big deal.
Yeah.
Major issue.
Yeah, and so, you know, obviously not only, you know, the NFL and the people who are organizing that, but, you know, it also would not look great for mayor, you know, the mayor and the city council and stuff like that. So needless to say, they are probably, you know, with that threat looming over the city and over the MARTA management, they are likely taking steps at this point to try and appease that. But just want to dive into some of the reasons that the folks at MARTA are considering or finding it necessary to strike and do it on such a public stage. That they're basically unhappy with the prolonged wage stagnation that they've had. They're being forced to work overtime, required overtime, frequently, even when they aren't necessarily willing to. And they're being required by management to put in more money towards their health insurance costs. And on top of all those things, there's also been talks and a little bit of action towards outsourcing some of the work, particularly in the realm of paratransit, which is, you know, it's not directly just a main bus, but you have sort of smaller buses that go around and provide direct transit for folks who are not able to necessarily use a bus, a large public bus. And so that work is being outsourced. It's being privatized to contract workers, which, you know, is true in a lot of other cities. But that's something that, you know, if it is a union job, if it's something that the folks in the ATU are performing, they're not, you know, they're not going to be happy with that being outsourced to a contract worker, someone who doesn't receive the benefits, doesn't receive the quality of pay and the quality of work, and ultimately undercuts their stance, their bargaining position. So those are the main things that the folks at MARTA, or particularly the operators at MARTA, are upset about. And they just cannot get the management to agree with them on those things.
And I'm seeing no raise in over 10 years. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, so that's, you know, 10 years is a long time. Granted, it's been basically the entire length. You know, 10 years ago, we were in the depths of the major economic recession in 2008. But, you know, we've supposedly recovered since then. Mm-hmm. And so you would think, you know, obviously wage stagnation is a problem across the American economy and across the world economy, but you would think particularly a strong public sector position 10 years after the fact would have seen some wage increase.
You would hope. And 15 I believe the starting wage is $15, and that's not enough for for what you're doing. People's lives are on the line, and you need to be fully compensated.
Absolutely. And you know, there's a big movement around the country right now that is claiming that $15 should be the minimum wage. You know, there's the Fight for 15 and there's a 15 Now. But you know, the larger concept is that $15 an hour should be the base pay for any position anywhere in the country. And so for that to be the starting pay for someone who, you know, and driving a bus doesn't require an advanced degree, but it does require a lot of training. And not only are you having to perform the operation of driving a large vehicle, but you're also doing so with, you know, the lives of, you know, if you have 50 people on the bus, you know, you're responsible for all of those lives. So that is a large ask for someone who would be effectively working for a minimum wage to be doing. Now, the minimum wage in Atlanta currently is not $15 an hour, but the mayor there, Kasem Reed, has, I believe this was last year, he agreed and he made it, I guess he passed a resolution saying that the city's minimum wage for public employees, so city employees, mm-hmm. would go up to $15 an hour by 2019. Now, MARTA, I believe, is not a Atlanta City government employee. They are not Atlanta City government employees. They are independent government employees of the state of Georgia. But still, you know, if city employees having their minimum, or if their minimum wage is going to be $15 an hour, you would think that that should be the starting pay for someone driving a bus in that city should be slightly higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are some of the main grievances that the folks down there are putting forward that they are trying to have alleviated in the negotiations. And, you know, just a little bit more background on that. Not only has their have their wages not gone up in 10 years, but they also say that because of the wage stagnation in line with inflation has basically left them at a 15% pay reduction over that 10 years. So they've actually, in the 10 years since they last saw a pay raise, they are now actually effectively earning less in a city where, you know, we see this in this city and we see it in every major city. Rents and cost of living are going up.
Yeah.
And Atlanta is no exception to that. It was determined that in the city of Atlanta, you need to be earning $16.79 an hour just to be able to rent a two-bedroom apartment. So if you're trying to raise a family on what would effectively be a minimum wage job there, that's just not going to cut it. So that's where they're coming from. Management has basically asked workers to pay more to their health insurance too, which, you know, not only, so if you're only earning $15 an hour to start, you're of course paying your union dues, you're paying rent and all those other things, but you're also then putting more money towards health insurance, which is one of the main reasons or one of the major benefits of working for a unionized position and working for a government position. So that then cuts into their take-home pay. And on top of that, the folks are not seeing the love. You know, they don't think that the management has their best interests in mind. Another major issue that they're putting forward is our safety concerns, and you know, particularly around maintenance and the upkeep of the buses that they're driving around all day that they're responsible for. Effectively, they think that, you know, they're skimping on the safety inspections mm-hmm. before the buses hit the road, and that they're, you know, effectively putting unsafe buses on the road, and that they are not hiring up to the standard that they, you know, to the staffing levels that they need, and they're just trying to go without in order to cut costs and save money. The ATU put forward numbers that I have here. They said that MARTA is currently down 73 mechanics, so there are 73 open positions in the mechanic field.
Wow.
There. And yeah, 200 bus drivers, two vacant positions for a bus driver, 15 in the light rail operators, and 39 for security officers. So, you know, they are clearly not in any hurry to hire more mm-hmm. people and to get up to the staffing level that would make it a safe and efficient work environment. So,
well, there's no reason, you know, why would you want to be a bus driver and put yourself through that for $15 an hour? That's just not worth your time.
Exactly. You know, it's not worth your time, and it could end up being dangerous. I mean, anyone who hasn't driven a bus, anyone who's ridden a bus knows that a bus driver puts up with a lot. And anyone who has driven a bus can probably tell you a lot more than that. But
I have not driven a bus, but I have ridden many times, and you deserve more than $15 an hour if you're at the helm there.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, the least you can do is be earning a living wage to be dealing with being basically the face of your city government, of your transit agency, to every person who rides in the city of Atlanta. So that's where they're coming from. Now, the connection, you know, with sports, obviously they're threatening to do this, to go on strike in the middle of the Super Bowl, which, you know, the media and the city leaders and the NFL and likely all the teams and, you know, the owners of the teams and everything will likely put forward that that's a terrible idea and that they're really harming the city of Atlanta and they're harming the experience for the fans. And while that, you know, from the perspective of management, that may very well be true, I think that it's actually a brilliant move, you know, to use a stage. You're being handed a platform. Mm-hmm. You know, these folks are going to be required to work during the Super Bowl, and they'll probably have to work more, probably some extra overtime to cover the increased load on their system. Mm-hmm. And so what better, you know, you have a international stage. Really, the Super Bowl is an international event. And so you have that stage to basically make your case on. And, you know, to a degree, it really will bring the city managers and the management of MARTA to the table because they have no choice. They need to be running buses. You know, they need to be running trains. And if they have to do so without, you know, the majority of their employees, they're going to have some trouble when the demand goes up. So more power to you down there. And, you know, we'll see how this plays out. There's a good chance that just the threat of the strike will bring the managers to the table and hopefully get some of the ATU's demands met. But, you know, that still remains to be seen at this point. At this point, I believe it was last Monday, or no, sorry, October 6th, they had a major rally outside of the head of the chairperson for the board of MARTA, the government board that oversees them. And they held a Moral Monday rally outside of the chairperson's law office. And they tried to bring in, you know, not only folks who were part of the ATU, but other community members, other union members to come and support them, other people in the faith community there as well to come support them and show solidarity. And it seems like that did have a bit of an effect too, a positive effect. Mm. And so basically what they're calling for is a fair contract and an end to the scheme to outsource essential transit services and economic justice for all Atlantans. Atlantans. But, you know, so you can see they're reaching beyond simply their narrow scope, and they're trying to bring in the larger labor community and the larger social justice community to support them on this, because ultimately, and we'll get into this in a minute, but ultimately this type of action, this type of, you know, massive strike, especially when it is something like transit related or something that mm-hmm. will stop and affect the lives of other people in that city, it really is essential to have more than just your narrow group, but to have a large, you know, a broad base of support for that movement. Otherwise, you will likely, you know, you'll lose the hearts and minds. You'll lose the battle in the media and in the public mind. So that's an exciting development down there, and we wish them the best, and we hope that goes well for them. And just to give some context, this is not the first time in this country or in even the Super Bowl history where transit workers have threatened to strike in order to bring the management to the table. So the MARTA folks, they've been operating without a contract for most of this year. Last year at the Super Bowl, which was held in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the Metro Transit workers there, who are part of ATU Local 1005 in Minneapolis, they also threatened to strike because they were in the midst of contract negotiations as well. And they saw that, you know, in the same way that the folks at MARTA see it, they saw it as a good platform to have their demands heard and to bring management to the table to actually deal with them on a fair footing. So, you know, clearly there's a trend here. The folks in Minneapolis, they the threat of striking, they didn't actually end up striking during the Super Bowl, but just the threat ended up winning them a 2.5% wage increase over the next 3 years. So from last year, mm-hmm. One of the big things they were, you know, similar to the folks in MARTA, they were also not only looking for increases in wage and health benefits, but they were also concerned with safety. And so some of the major improvements that they got were like plexiglass barriers between the operator and the public, to keep them safer, and increased more patrols and more cameras, and more police presence within the system, or security presence, and more cameras to document what was happening, just to keep them safe. And so that, you know, just the threat of striking during such a public moment for that city ended up winning them a major victory. So, you know, continuing along that thread, in 2015, the ATU, local 1433 in Phoenix, Arizona, where the Super Bowl was being held as well, the bus drivers there ended up, they also threatened to strike, and they ended up getting their needs met as well, because they were in the middle of a contract negotiation. They had similar demands. You know, they were looking for increased health benefits, sick and vacation time, as well as increased safety. So that worked out for them. You know, we're showing a trend here. This is a pretty good move. Mm-hmm. In 2009, in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Phillies were in the World Series against the New York Yankees. And when the three games at home in the middle of that series were held in Philadelphia, SEPTA, which is the public transit agency in Philadelphia, those workers who are part of Transit Workers Union Local 243, they threatened to go on strike during those games because they were in the midst of a contract negotiation as well. They didn't end up striking during the games, but immediately following Game 5, which was the final game in Philadelphia before the series moved back to New York, at 3 a.m. the following morning, they called a strike. And so they actually went on, I'm not sure exactly how long that strike was, but they went on a multi-day strike to, you know, do the same thing, to get concessions from management during their negotiations. It's interesting is that it actually happened to be on Election Day in 2009, which mm-hmm. was not, you know, that was an off year, so it wasn't as major an event, but still an interesting coincidence. And just as a side note to that, the Democratic governor of Pennsylvania at that time, Ed Rendell, came out and blasted them for that, and he attacked the union and called the strike. He blasted the strike and blasted the union and said it was ridiculous. So just shows you that it is not only Republicans who will stand up or will push back against, you know, labor, but it's Democrats sometimes will fall into that category as well. And one final example, this is an international, you know, it's not just an American phenomenon, but internationally, in 2012, during the London Olympics, you actually had London bus workers, and the London bus system is massive. But those workers threatened to go on strike during the Olympics there in 2012 over negotiations or, you know, over issues with, they were promised bonuses for working overtime. It was seen that they were seeing that that wasn't going to happen, so they threatened to strike over that, and they ended up getting their demands met as well. So you can see that that's actually an interesting tactic, and it does have some history. You know, so protest in sports does not only exist for folks on the field or, you know, within the media realm, but also if, you know, in the surrounding area, in the support staff that goes into major sporting events, you can also see true labor organizing and victories coming out of that. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty exciting. And, you know, in 2013, the workers at BART in the San Francisco Bay Area, I believe BART stands for Bay Area Rapid Transit, but those workers who are a part of SEIU 1021 and ATU 1555, they actually went on a prolonged 4.5-day strike. You know, similar thing, they were in the middle of contract negotiations, which seems to be that is the time that you do go on strike when they're pushing back against the things that you're asking for and you're trying to hold the line. But this was actually a great example of a successful transit strike that not only won, you know, so they went through the strike, and not only did it win them the concessions that they were looking for, mm-hmm. but they also had public support with them, which, you know, that's one of the main things that I think, you know, if you go on strike, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but if you go on strike, you're going to have management attacking you, obviously. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, media, you know, particularly mainstream media and the folks who will be, you know, of either owned by or similarly conditioned as the people who are in the management class, they'll likely attack you too.
Right.
We've seen that. You know, that's just the reality of American media. But, you know, so you'll be receiving those attacks on all sides. And in order to really win, you do need to have a broad base of support, including not only your union brothers and sisters and folks from other unions, but you also need the public to come out and support
you. You need the people who ride. You need them to be behind you.
Exactly. You know, and if the folks who ride, if you're inconveniencing them from getting to where they need to go, and they don't support you, then you lose, you know, you're down pretty quick.
It's an uphill battle.
Exactly. And so they were able to strike and get public support for that strike, which, you know, is pretty amazing, and it just shows that there is power when you do, you know, when you strike across union, because that was multiple unions striking, mm-hmm. but also when you build with community groups and coalitions to get community support behind you. So that that's just a good path towards transit labor victories, I guess. So that was a little deep dive, and I realize now we have about 4 minutes left in our time, so we'll just keep chugging right along.
Chug.
Yeah, just cover a few things that are going on right now. You know, so not only is MARTA, the folks in Atlanta, threatening to strike, but the teachers union, the folks in Los Angeles, I believe their union is, let's see, where did I put that? Oh, here we go. Their union is the United Teachers of Los Angeles, and they are part of the LAUSD, which is the Los Angeles Unified School District, which is just one, it's the biggest school district in the Southern California, okay. Los Angeles area. But they are also prepared to strike come next month, come the new year, over contract negotiations as well. And, you know, if there's one thing we saw over the past year, it's that, you know, not only are teachers in need of increases in pay and you know, more funding for education and all those things, but when teachers' unions are organized and they get the community behind them, which we have seen from West Virginia all the way through, you know, Oklahoma, other states, it is successful. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully the folks in Los Angeles, they held a rally this past Saturday, and they had 50,000 protesters out there, not only, you know, union members, but also community members, parents. The parents are concerned about overcrowding and underfunding, and so they're out there supporting the teachers because mm-hmm. they know that the teachers, you know, the work environment of the teacher is the learning environment for their student. Yeah. So that's a pretty exciting development, and we'll see how that turns out for them. And then, of course, we are, you know, by this Friday, there's a looming threat of a government shutdown.
Yeah.
Which, you know, who knows how that's going to turn out, but it's basically the sticking point is funding for Donald Trump's border wall. Extremely, extremely racist and unnecessary border wall. And so they are at an impasse, negotiation-wise, between the Democrats and the Trump administration, the Republicans, on funding for that. Trump is asking for $5 billion for that wall. If there is, in fact, a government shutdown, though, you know, all of the nonsense surrounding this issue aside, that means a lot of government federal employees are out of work temporarily until the government comes back up. But, you know, you have two different groups. You have the essential employees, which of which there are about 420,000 essential employees who will be forced to work but be unpaid. And then you have 380,000 who will face furloughs, and that is essentially, you know, you're forced to not come into work, and you very well might not get paid unless Congress decides to retroactively pay you. So that's a large, you know, it's 75, it's about 30% of the federal government could face unpaid either work or forced unwork,
wow.
furlough.
Yeah.
Some of the folks who will be forced to work are the Secret Service, who protect Donald Trump and other major government figures, the TSA, because of course we're heading into a busy holiday season, and ICE and Border Patrol.
Naturally.
You know, that's sort of the whole sticking issue there. But yeah, so hopefully that can be averted. Hopefully the charades around or the ridiculous theater around the issue of border walls can be dealt with before folks have to go without money, without work. But that remains to be seen. We, of course, as always, sped straight through our time. That's pretty amazing how that happens. Next time, Zach, we will get to issues where we actually can discuss some things that you have experience in.
Sure thing.
But yeah, thank you again for joining me, Zach.
Of course.
And thank you all out there for listening. My guest has been Zach Markovich. I am Michael Cathcart. This has been Labor Radio. Have a great night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor The Dark Crystal, playing as benefit for Janus Youth, Monday, December 17th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. 1,000 years ago, the mysterious Dark Crystal was damaged and an age of chaos began. The orphan Jan, raised in solitude by a race of peace-loving wizards, embarks on a quest to find the missing shard of the Dark Crystal to restore the balance of the universe. Again, that's The Dark Crystal, playing Monday, December 17th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and